I always worry about AI. That's the deal.
Hello and welcome to episode 106 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Pachko and Angie Han.
Hi.
Hey, everybody.
All right, so we've got two segments of the show today. First, we are going to talk about South by Southwest, and then we're going to do our full review of Midnight Special. So first up is South by Southwest. If you heard last week's episode, you probably heard us talking about how me and Christy were in a hotel in Austin, and that's because we went down for the festival, and this was my fourth year, this was her first year, and I think we both had an equally incredible time. Before I get to my favorite movies of the fest, I am going to toss it to Christy to talk about hers.
Yeah, so it was my first South By. It was very intimidating, but Perry made it a lot easier because she knows her way around. But yeah, my first pick for a movie I'm really excited about and you should all look for is War on Everyone, which is by John Michael McDonough, and he's the guy who did The Guard and Calvary. And I didn't know anything about this movie except the director and except that it had Michael Peña and Alexander Sarsgaard. And I was like, in. And the movie is a corrupt cop, dark, dark comedy that literally starts off with them chasing down a mime in a cop car. And one turns to the other and says, if you hit a mime, does he make a sound? And then they do, and he doesn't. And if that sounds funny to you, this movie will appeal to you. It is wildly offensive, but like in a great way where it truly is offensive to everyone. So the message is ultimately about equality.
So you would say it's a war on everyone, Christy?
Legit.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it delivers. It is the most outrageous comedy I've seen in a really long time. And like, you know, we just came off like Brothers Grimsby, which like tries to be like a war on everyone, but mostly seems like it's punching down. This movie is just flailing
at
everything.
Part of the
reason
it works so well is because of the two performances too, because like they're doing such crazy, insane things, but they're so grounded that like you really believe that like they genuinely think they're doing like whatever's in their best interest.
Well, and also it has a cast that is actually very representative of the world. So it doesn't feel like a bunch of white people making snarky comments. You know what I mean? It's really funny. And I actually laughed so hard that I went into a coughing fit watching this movie.
Out of curiosity,
Can
you tell me what part made you go into a coughing fit?
Iceland.
Okay.
Iceland.
Okay.
If there's a scene in Iceland that just destroys me.
I was giggling for a while after somebody misspells the word homeless, and then someone a couple minutes later says homeless. And for some reason, I just like lost my shit.
It's such a wildly funny movie. The audience was cracking up, and it's cool because we've seen Alexander Sarsgaard do a lot of different stuff, but I've never seen him do comedy quite like this, and he's great at it. Him and Michael Peña make a perfect partnership, so I love that. And speaking of really good partnership, my second pick I'm going to talk about really quickly so we can move through is Don't Think Twice, which is the second film from Mike Birbiglia, who did Sleepwalk With Me. And I liked Sleepwalk With Me okay, but I loved Don't Think Twice. It's about a New York improv group, but he uses that specific concept to talk more broadly about being in your 30s and being in a field that is creative and therefore very competitive, and kind of like, when do you fish and cut bait? You know what I mean? And as someone who is a writer in New York, I felt really connected to this movie, like to a point where when the movie was over, I was crying and shaking, and I scared the shit out of Matt Donato from We Got This Covered, who roomed with Perry and I, and basically had to like babysit me to get me back to the hotel. He's like, are you okay? That was a comedy. What's wrong with you? But it was like, one, lack of sleep, but two, I so related to the world that they presented that it was like, you know, that Killing Me Softly moment where I was like, they know me. And that's coming to the Tribeca Film Festival. So these two will have a chance to see it soon. And I'm sure it's going to get a release. I feel like it has one somewhere, but that they're both really hilarious, really strange movies that I was obsessed with.
All right. Well, I'm sold on the two that Christy just pitched. So Perry, you're up.
All right. I've got three to blow through, so I'm going to try to get through them quickly. The first one that I'm going to talk about is Richard Linklater's new movie, Everybody Wants Some. And fortunately, that is coming out April 8th, so you'll get to see that one really soon. But as someone who is a diehard Dazed and Confused fan, I took that the spiritual sequel designation very seriously, and it really did feel like that to me. It just kind of like rekindled that same kind of feeling where you're living in this, like, instead of like the high school scenario, a college scenario with like this baseball team, and they are such jerks in this movie, but something about the environment and hanging out with them, it's so much fun that, I mean, I wish this movie didn't end. When it finally wrapped up, like, I could have spent like hours more with these guys. Again, the soundtrack here is on point, and I'm so excited because the studio sent the people who covered The Junket the soundtrack, so now I'm listening to it nonstop. I'm obsessed with it. So yeah, Everybody Wants Some is definitely one of my favorite films at the festival, and one of my other favorites is actually another movie that I saw right after that. So I had a really excellent first night at South by Southwest. The movie I saw after that was Fede Alvarez's second feature film called Don't Breathe. And in case you don't know who he is, he's the one who directed the Evil Dead remake a couple years ago. And I know some people weren't that into it because, understandably so, it wasn't the Evil Dead remake other people wanted. I really enjoyed it and thought that was like a beautiful looking horror movie. And this movie has the same qualities, but I think the fact that it is not attached to an existing property and one that has a more comedic base to it is going to make people really fall for his work here. It's about a group of three delinquent types who use one of their fathers. They own a security company, so they steal the keys from the father and then they go and rob houses. And one house that they choose to rob is owned by a blind war veteran who happened to get a ton of money in a court case. And so they think that they're going to have the edge on him, and they don't. And, you know, this blind man is played by Stephen Lang, so you probably have a good idea of where this is heading. But this is, like, not only is the story solid, I think most of the character development is pretty good. I take one issue with a certain plot point that I'm not going to get into now. But, like, this is also, like, a super suspenseful, beautiful horror movie. It is just so well shot, and like there's scenes that really play off the idea of like a guy being blind and then his victims being able to see, like where it like turns the tables on both characters in ways that it's incredible. This is easily one of my favorite movies that I saw at the festival. I also want to highlight, because we've been talking about a lot of not Christie's picks, so both my picks were studio films. This one is not. It's an independent film called Teenage Cocktail, and it's about two girls who, one girl's new in school, one girl is not. You know, she's like the awkward outcast, and they kind of befriend each other. But it's all about what happens to them as they grow closer, and as one kind of influences the other to do webcam modeling. And, you know, teenage webcam modeling never turned into a good thing, and sure enough, it doesn't here. But I love this movie a lot because it is a really, it's a really engaging high school relationship movie, like, in the quintessential sense that you've seen before, that is just kind of instantly engaging and, like, pulls you in a way that you're like, oh, I miss high school and being friends like that. But then on the other hand, it's also a really intense thriller, and it's got a pretty drastic shift towards the end that works really well because of the performances. And if we don't have to wrap up on this section, I just have to say one thing.
Go ahead.
Fucking Sausage Party.
Sausage Party? Sausage Party. Boo.
Come on.
We hard disagree on this. Perry thought it was super funny. I thought it was funny for the first 10 minutes, and then I just sat there staring at the screen for like the next 90.
So not my type of humor at all, but like, holy shit. I mean, I was laughing out loud. Tears were streaming out of my eyes from start to finish.
You were also sleep exhausted. That's shenanigans.
When you see the third act of this movie, like, I don't care if you like the movie or not, it's just going to be like, holy shit, how were they allowed to do this? I've never seen a third act in a movie quite like this.
I will agree with that.
I will say that as someone who didn't go to South By, but, like, read a lot of the reviews that came out of it and stuff, like, that one has gotten just reactions all across the board. Like, some people loved it, some people hated it, a lot of people were in the middle, some people were, like, about half of it were, like, I swear I had this idea before
I read this headline somewhere, but someone compared it to Inside Out. And I think I said it to Matt as we walked out. I'm like, it's got like Inside Out, like world building. Where like, I didn't think that they'd be able to take the whole food items come to life and like create this world. But like, that's kind of what it reminded me of.
All right. So we have 1 minute. We have like 1 minute before we should move on. But real quick, you guys saw Preacher?
We saw Preacher together.
We did see Preacher together. I don't know. It's weird because, like, I read the comics for Preacher to kind of prepare because I was doing interviews with the cast. And I feel like if I hadn't read those comics, I would have no idea what's going on in that first episode.
I feel I read some of the comics. I didn't prepare as well as Christy. I read maybe like 20 pages of the comics, but I agree. If I had not read those first 20 pages and had somewhat of a sense of what I was getting into, I don't know if I would have understood as much as I did. And like, I regardless, one way or the other, whether I knew the source material or not, I didn't love the pilot, but there were certain sequences in it and certain characters that I loved so much. I want to see more of them.
I do want to say that, yeah. I really do like the way they twisted some things. Like, they have a different take on the character of Tulip, and I can't get too into it because we should really move on. But there were some things I really thought were interesting. I just, as a pilot, I was kind of, I don't know what I think of it yet. I'm intrigued.
How about this? As a pilot, like, the whole purpose is to make you want to watch more. Does it make you want to watch more?
It makes me want to watch more of Tulip and Cassidy, and that's it.
Christy?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah, of the three main characters, Tulip and Cassidy are pretty damn interesting, and I would probably tune into the second episode.
I like the actor who played him a lot.
Arsefakes makes me very uncomfortable. If you don't know what we're talking about.
Oh, it's funny. When I was looking at it in the comics, it made me very uncomfortable, and it made me think that when they did bring it to screen that I was going to be like so turned off by it that I wouldn't like it, but I thought the actor did a really good job of wearing that prosthetic in a way that felt natural.
We'll talk about Preacher more when it comes up. It is intriguing. I'm not sure what I think of the pilot still. I don't know. But let's move on to Midnight Special, which did screen at South by Southwest. But it opens in limited release this weekend and then wide release April 1st. So you'll have your chance to see it. I hate this plot synopsis. Like, shit, this plot synopsis, I feel like, gives away spoilers. Whatever, fine. This is the plot synopsis. If you don't want to know spoilers, hit the 15-second button. A father and son go on the run after the dad learns his child possesses special powers.
How is that a spoiler?
That's a premise of
the
movie.
Here's the thing. Because when I went into this movie, I didn't know that. And so when the movie starts, it literally starts with an Amber Alert. And then you see this guy
played
by Michael
Shannon.
You must
have just not watched a single trailer then.
Yeah. I didn't. I liked that I got to go into this movie not knowing that, because it starts with an Amber Alert and you see this kid calmly reading a comic book and this man being like, it's time to go, and picking him up. And it doesn't seem like it's a kidnapping situation because they seem really comfortable with each other, but the news is telling you that this is a kidnapping.
How about this? What synopsis would you give to tell people what the premise of this movie
is? I struggle with that a lot. I know I wrote one for I wrote my review for Spinoff, and I know I tried to never say that the relationships of those two characters, because I really like not knowing that for a bit. And that's what I enjoyed so much about Midnight Special. Now, Jeff Nichols, to those who don't know, the writer-director of this movie, he did Shotgun Stories and Mud and Take Shelter, and his brand of storytelling is very stripped down. He does not like exposition lines. Like, characters will never say something to each other like, well, sis, it's been good to see you. It's been so long since our parents died. Like, you don't get those kind of, like, like those lines that no one ever says. No one says that in life, but they say it in the movies. He
almost
doesn't
to
do
fault,
that.
Because there are like lots of relationships in this movie that, like, I don't think it's a bad thing for the movie, but it does like create an air of mystery where, like, later on you find out like how some of these people know each other and you're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I it is tricky because, like I said, the movie starts off with three characters and you don't necessarily know who they are, what they're doing, or how they relate. And I actually really like that. I felt like it treated the audience with this level of respect that I don't think a lot of movies do anymore. I don't think it works in every aspect of this film. But for me, it was cool. It kind of felt like, you know, you were thrown into the story in such an intimate way that the story's not going to slow down for you. And it reminded me of the films of Asghar Farhadi, who does these Iranian films, The Separation and The Past. And I love those movies because they feel so real to me because we're not catered to as an audience. And so for me, his take on that was really fun and satisfying. I described it as art house Amblin because it's not for everyone. It's his most commercial film and yet not a commercial film. But I
wish
feel like
people
I
would stop
that more.
Calling it Amblin, though, because like this is not an Amblin movie at all. Like, just because it's a kid and it involves some supernatural powers, everyone's like, oh, it's like his.
No, I think thematically, I think aesthetically, it looks a lot like not just like E.T., but also like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, like that genre, that era of science fiction where like production design and stuff was meant to tell you a lot more about the character than I think is relied upon now.
I feel like hearing that over and over beforehand made me even more disappointed in the movie. But in terms of Jeff Nichols' work, Mud, of all of his films, is much more my speed. And that movie's a little more generous with exposition and, like, really having, like, a plot hammered out where you know the road you're going on. But I did really appreciate Take Shelter, and I appreciate, you know, how him not revealing everything. That movie, though, it's... You get inside the character's head a little more than you do with this, where like his experience and like the outside world, and like you're just able to put yourself in his shoes much more so than you can in this situation. And it's like, the movie Midnight Special is so slow, and I was getting so little information out of it. Like, I just didn't give a shit. Like, I wasn't putting the pieces together in a satisfying way. And the end, I'm surprised you weren't using the word satisfying, because the way that I would describe this movie to me is unsatisfying. I took nothing from this movie at all. Like,
I remember you got back to the hotel and you were pretty mad.
Take Shelter is something that I carried around with me for a while, and I enjoyed, you know, thinking about it and what was going through this guy's head, and how, like, you know, what would it be like if I encountered someone who was behaving like that, and what would it mean? And here it's just like, I don't know, the performances were good and I bought all the characters, but at the same time, like, I just didn't really give a shit about what anyone was
going through.
You didn't
have enough to
hang on to. I was in between the two of you. Like, I kind of see both points. I know we're like all over the spectrum on this one. But like, I agree. Like, I think it's, I can see why people are calling it as like Jeff Nichols does Amblin, but I think the emphasis should be on Jeff Nichols, because it's still very much a Jeff Nichols film, much more than it's an Amblin film, which makes sense because he's the one who's fucking directing it. But I mean,
it's crazy to me that Warner Brothers, right? They're distributing this movie. So it's like, people are going to go
see a studio movie,
expecting it to be a studio movie. And I feel like the large majority are going to be like, what the fuck?
I worry about that, because honestly,
I've cursed
like,
a lot this episode. I'm sorry.
Sorry?
I cursed a lot this episode. I think I've said those like that word like 3-4 times.
Wow, that's the difference between you and me, though. Angie and I are just like, fuck, 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 and don't give a fuck. And Perry's like, I said fuck 3 times. Pardon my heavens.
Or we're rubbing off on her. But I mean, like, I think it's very slow. I think that the, you know, performances are really good. But I guess the reason I didn't find it that satisfying, ultimately, I wasn't as unsatisfied as Perry, but like, I just don't. Like, it's very slow, and then there's just not, it didn't feel like there was that much to it. Like, I was
my
like,
favorite character in this was Adam Driver, because
he's great.
He to me is the perfect balance of, like, you know, he did kind of know what was going on, but at the same time, he really didn't understand it at all. So every time we were with him, I felt like I was like learning something, and I was like sinking my teeth into the story a little more. But then all of a sudden, we would go back to the family, who were like a billion steps ahead of me, and I didn't get it. Also, it's a very different performance
because I think that he adds a level of humor that makes this movie more real. Like, he's not like, it's not like he's trying to be funny, but he's just like brings a slight bit of lightness to this movie that otherwise is like very like people just like frowning a lot, like all the time, like nobody ever
smiles.
And
he's also the most enthusiastic character, where everybody else is in this very dire straits moment. He's kind of you know, he's kind of the guy that finds out magic is real. So he plays this FBI agent who's basically trying to track down this kid and figure out what's going on. And I was quite delighted with it because, you know, I feel like before The Force Awakens, we were all saying Adam Driver does this one thing, and it's that kind of like wrangly Brooklyn guy, and he does it really well, but it's the thing he does. And then all of a sudden he gave us Kylo Ren, and we're like, oh, also he can be emo bad guy. Love it. And like in this, it's something totally different. It's something that is neither one of those things. And it was really fun to watch him live in this role. I feel like Adam Driver's really is evolving an actor, and that was really satisfying to watch. I totally understand. I do think, and I recognize this in my review, I think that Midnight Special is a movie that demands a lot from the audience, and that not everyone is going to engage in it like I did, and I understand that. But for me, it was really, I feel like it used the genre tropes in a way that, like, we know these kind of stories. You know, it's that government chase movie where, like, Firestarter or E.T. or whatever, where the government's like, we know what to do with this technology or this thing more than you do, so we're going to take it from you. And they're like, no, you don't understand the truth. You know, it's that kind of X-Files thing. And so we know those beats. So I didn't need those belabored, and I didn't really mind that there were questions that aren't answered in this movie, willfully not answered. Because to me, it was a movie about faith, and like, I liked how it contrasted the way the farm, which is a cult introduced, it behaves versus the way the main characters behave. And I was very swept up in this kind of difference and this excitement and the level of trust that Nichols gives us. But yeah, it's still a Nichols movie. It is not like accessible to
it's
all.
Not
and
as
I,
mainstream
I get that
as the studio I think wants it to be. But I mean, like, I guess to me the only part of the film that really resonated like really deeply, I mean, I think it's well made, but the part of the film that really resonated with me emotionally, the only part is Michael Shannon and his and the son, like the performance that they have, like, or their performances and their dynamic, and just like the way like Michael Shannon, like he is fantastic in this film. Like, he just like, you, he doesn't
can
talk
you name
that much,
one but bad Michael Shannon performance?
Okay, no. But come exactly. on, still, he deserves credit for how good he is here.
Don't true.
Ding
he's
Michael
amazing
Shannon
all the time.
Just because he's good in everything.
Even when he's reading
I'm
angry
sure
sorority
was
girl
a major
letters.
Compliment.
I just know, but so I was good. Like, I was like, he's really good in this. And Perry's like, he's good in everything. Oh, I mean, Perry, yeah. You're just so like, whatever. You're so
like, that, spoiled that helped by him Michael for the first time. He's like lazy and doesn't feel like giving it 100%, which I don't think is ever going to happen because it's going to be in such stark contrast with the rest of his resume. He's
well, it's
incredible.
Like right now he has like Elvis and Nixon coming up, and I'm already dying to see that. Like him as Elvis, yes, please.
Other than Adam Driver, though, I think one of the most successful elements of Midnight Special is just the family dynamic. And not just him. I think, you know, bringing in Kirsten Dunst and Joel Edgerton, they really have, like, an insane amount of chemistry that, like, even if you check out in certain respects really early, kind of like I did, you're still going to care about that. But, you know, I greatly
like
appreciate
his character. You don't know how he fits in at first, but he becomes a really vital part of the movie.
Yeah, but I greatly appreciate the opportunity to see a movie where a filmmaker isn't feeding me all the information and like requires me to do some work as well. But in order for that to work for me, I need to be given a certain something by the end of it. And I feel like I put all this work into this movie and in the end, I'm like, what's the point?
Oh man.
I feel a little bit like that. Like I liked the movie overall, but I do feel like I was like, well, I was hoping there'd be a little bit more to that. So Christine.
Okay. I don't know. I liked it. I liked that in the end, we don't have all the answers to kind of to what Alton's powers are or even what the end necessarily means. I understand your frustration. I don't know. I think for me, we see so many movies that feel like they're doing the same thing. I was really refreshed to see something that took so many risks. And for me, I thought that was really fun and rewarding.
Yeah, all right. I see that too.
All right. So I guess that's a wrap. That's a wrap on episode 106 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You guys know what to do. Please go on iTunes where you can subscribe to the podcast and you can also rate and comment. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter, @PopcornProsecco. And please like us on Facebook as well. You could also catch all three of us all over the internet. Angie, do you want to go first?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter @AJHAN and I write for /film.com.
Christy?
You can find me on Twitter @ChristyPuchko. That's KRISTYPUCHKO. And I write all over the interwebs, but you can keep up with my career highlights at DecadentCriminals.com, where I have tons of South By stuff coming.
And you can catch all of my South By stuff on Collider.com, and my Twitter handle is PNemiroff. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Nice. Well played.
Good people die every day believing in things.